Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
The Biden administration approved the Willow Project within the National Petroleum Reserve on Alaska's North Slope. State leaders and the congressional delegation are celebrating the advancement of the proposal that could, at peak, add 40% more oil to the Trans-Alaska pipeline over today's production level. But environmentalists have denounced Willow as a climate bomb and say the approval runs counter to Biden's commitments to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Will opponents be able to stop the project in court, or will Alaska's oil industry see a big increase after years of decline? We'll discuss the Willow Project today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska.
The South Central Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will develop proposals to change federal subsistence hunting and trapping regulations and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting March 15th and 16th in Anchorage. More information at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. The Biden administration has repeatedly made clear that reducing emissions is a top priority. President Biden called the Inflation Reduction Act the biggest, most important climate bill in the history of our country. In November, Biden affirmed commitment to the Paris Agreement to reduce emissions by 50% below 2005 levels by 2030, saying, "Today, I can stand here as President of the United States and say with confidence the United States of America will meet our emissions targets by 2030. For the Willow Project, the administration did reduce the number of drill pads from the 5 requested by ConocoPhillips to 3 pads with more than 200 wells. Right before the approval was made public, the administration announced new Arctic protections. Alaska Public Media reported the administration plans to stiffen protection on 13 million acres, more than half of the 23 million acre reserve, in areas considered to have high natural and historical value. The administration also announced that President Biden will withdraw 2.8 million acres of the Beaufort Sea from potential offshore oil and gas leases. In 2016, President Barack Obama removed almost all of the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas from consideration. Biden's action would remove the remaining section, a strip of ocean near the NPRA. Here to help us understand what development at Willow means for both domestic energy production and the concerns it raises regarding carbon emissions is Nagarik Harcharik. Nagarik is the president of Voice of the Arctic Inupiat, which supports the Willow Project. And also with us today is Tim Woody. Tim is with the Wilderness Society, which denounces Willow as a climate disaster. We'll also hear from others on both sides of this development debate in today's program. And you can also join us. Do you think developing Willow is a good plan, or do you want to see Alaska and the nation transition away from fossil fuels at a faster pace? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That number is 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Tim, I want to start with you first. After a long fight against this project, the Wilderness Society and other conservation organizations did not prevail. Carlin Ichchok, Alaska director for the Wilderness Society, said no other oil and gas project has greater potential to undermine the Biden administration's climate goals, and we're going to fight this project with everything we have in the toolbox. Tim, does this mean the Wilderness Society will definitely sue to try to stop Willow? And if so, when do you see that legal challenge coming?
Yes, the Wilderness Society and partner organizations definitely plan to sue. I don't know the exact timing of that, but I know that ConocoPhillips is preparing to move forward pretty rapidly with this project. So I don't know dates for filing or anything, but it'll be sooner than later.
How do you respond to comments such as Governor Dunleavy has made about North Slope development, saying it's better to do it here than in countries with sketchy or non-existent environmental standards? If you stop Willow, isn't it likely oil will just come from somewhere else?
Well, the counterargument to that is when we're talking about greenhouse gas emissions and climate change, the way I like to put it is two wrongs don't make a right. We need to transition away from fossil fuels. President Biden ran on a campaign of meeting climate goals. No new drilling on federal lands was one of his key policies. So when we look at starting a massive project, that will lead to three decades of greenhouse gas emissions totaling something like more than 280 million metric tons, we just can't look at that and say that's okay and it's fine because if we don't do it, someone else will.
Do you think, though, is it realistic to think that we can just stop now? I mean, we do need a transition period. What should that look like?
Exactly. Well, we already have many active leases on federal lands across the country. We already have a lot of active drilling. And we do need to transition. It will take time. Obviously, we cannot just stop using oil. Our economy is largely based on it in so many ways. But we think that starting massive new projects that will last three decades and lead to those kinds of greenhouse gas emissions is not going to get us there. It's going to undermine attempts to do that transition.
All right, Nagarok, I want to turn to you now. You said in an earlier interview that Alaska Native communities have coexisted with resource development for 50 years. With the growing amount of science related to climate change, do you think your organization will need to rethink what job creation should look like for the next 50 years in your region? Is there a path forward that you see for more renewable, sustainable economic development?
Thank you for the question. I think that regardless of what the future looks like, what we're going to need an economy and an economic base on the North Slope and in Alaska to be able to invest in whatever new technologies might be coming forward. And projects like Willow allow for the revenue to be generated on the North Slope so that we as North Slope residents and communities can make those investments on our own moving forward, kind of going, continuing our journey towards self-determination.
Nagarok, you said earlier that you haven't had a chance to review the other measures that the Biden administration has taken to protect and withdraw parts of NPRA and the Arctic Ocean from future development. But do you think you'll fight it, or does some area protection make sense?
I think it's just going to depend on whatever comes out formally. And when that happens, we'll review them, amongst ourselves and kind of decide a path forward based on that.
And when you talk about the money that's needed to adapt in the future, do you want to see a transition to renewable energy, or do you think fossil fuel development needs to be part of the mix into the future for many more decades?
Biden himself said we're going to need oil for at least 10 years. I think we've been arguing that it'll at least be another generation. So in the meantime, I think that gives us time to have those discussions, to figure out what that future looks like, and also provides for the economic foundation to be able to look to the future and look to the future properly with input from the communities and an economic base to be able to support that.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about the approval of the Willow Development Project, oil development project in the National Petroleum Reserve on Alaska's North Slope. The Biden administration announced that that project was approved for three drill pads, and the administration also announced additional protections for areas of NPRA and the Beaufort Sea. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Tim, We talked just briefly about this. Carlin had mentioned the need for a just transition to a more regenerative, renewable future. Willow, as you noted, is slated to be producing for 3 decades. So drill down a little bit more there on how quickly the nation and world can realistically transition. Will it take 3 decades, or how long do you, what does your research show about how quickly we could actually wean ourselves off fossil fuel?
Well, I'm not a scientist. I can't cite specific number of years that we it would take to do this transition. And it's going to go in fits and starts as it has already. So all we're advocating for is that we begin that transition. We begin working toward it and committing to it. And part of that means we don't commit to long-term massive oil and gas extraction projects that will drastically increase greenhouse gas emissions over such a long period of time. The time it will take to transition, I think, is highly debatable. And I'm not going to say it'll take X number of years, because I don't simply know that. But we do need to commit to it and get serious about it for the next generations. I mean, when you look at Willow and the amount of passion and outrage that it has generated among younger voters, Gen Z in particular, on social media just in the past few weeks, you know, it's massive. The people coming behind us, the younger generations, are very, very worried about this. The Stop Willow campaign went viral on TikTok in the 2 weeks leading up to this announcement. It led to more than 600 million people viewing videos labeled as Stop Willow. It generated more than 5 million comments to the administration and comments on change.org positions and things like that from people wanting this to stop because they recognize this is not sustainable. We have to transition.
And yet it was approved. Does that sort of trajectory concern you about the future and people's either tolerance for sustaining a fight like this, or, you know, just deciding, well, there's no sense in fighting it because it's going to get approved anyway?
Well, I think, yeah, there's definitely frustration among people who, especially some of the younger people I've talked to, who are very frustrated that they look at this and they think, we've spoken out, we've spoken with a massive voice, we've spoken with passion, we've spoken with the logic and the scientific data behind us, and yet this goes ahead and gets approved. So there's a lot of frustration, but there's also momentum. I think people are not giving up, particularly younger people who recognize that this is their future we're talking about. Many of us won't be around when Willow is exhausted 30 years from now or even less. But there are plenty of people out there who are going to be around living with the effects of Willow for many decades to come and even beyond the lifespan of Willow. And so I think that the motivation and the passion and the work to transition will continue.
All right. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Jack is in Craig. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, well, more like a statement. I'm for developing Willow because people got to realize out there, nationwide and worldwide, of course, the transition to renewable resources is the best thing, but it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, we've got to keep the oil flowing for now until we can eventually transition. I was on a former city council for 6 years, and we dabbled around with the idea of a wind farm, and we have the ideal location, and just with common sense we realized it wasn't going to impact our environment that much, so we were dabbling with that. But in the meantime, we still need energy to warm our houses, to feed our children, the very children that your guests are concerned about in the future. I have children that range from the age of 6 years old to 42, and there's six in between. And now we're all Alaskans, and take a look in the past. We've done pretty darn good taking care of our environment, especially up on the North Slope. We did have that one in disaster, but that wasn't Alaskans' fault. But I'm for developing renewable, but like I said, it's not going to happen overnight, and people have to realize that. And take a look at all the comments and everything that people have said. that we still approved Willow, because you know what? It's just common sense. You can't just take a bottle away from a baby. You got to wean that baby off or you're going to be in a world that hurts. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
All right. Well, okay. Well, thanks, Jack, for your comments from Craig. Tim, you know, this is not an uncommon sentiment here. So what are your thoughts about Jack's statement about we need it now? And you've admitted as much. We do need it now.
Right, right. We are not ready to cut off the supply of oil. Nobody would argue about that. We do need to begin the transition. But when we talk about needing this oil and even needing the revenue from the oil, what we haven't started talking about yet in this conversation is that even though many Alaskans do support Willow and do support this project moving forward, there are many people in Alaska who do not, particularly people in the local communities, adjacent to Willow or near Willow, who are very concerned about climate change. The Arctic is warming at 2 to 4 times the rate of the rest of the Earth, depending on which science you look at. But the scientific community is pretty united in that range. They're concerned about their loss of sea ice, coastal erosion. They're concerned about the impacts on air quality and subsistence resources that come with oil development. Rosemary Atungarek, the mayor of Nuiqsut, has spoken very much about this, very eloquently about this for years, that they are already seeing health issues in her community, and she's concerned about these things. But we have to also recognize that, you know, there are people there who will be negatively impacted by this, and they oppose it for those reasons. They need those subsistence resources.
And we, you know, we're glad that you could be here today, as we are that Nagra can join us as well. But Carlin Itchok, the Alaska region director, couldn't be with us today, but Carlin did talk about that very issue. Carlin says the Arctic should be off limits as the U.S. and the world transition away from oil.
Not in places that are seeing the brunt of the impact of the climate crisis. We recognize that there are economic challenges in this region, but many local residents, including the mayor of Nuiqsut, Rosemary Atungarok, and Eunice Brower from the native village of Nuiqsut tribal government, they all oppose Willow because of the negative impacts on the environment and the threats to the subsistence resources and the impact it will have on greenhouse gas emissions, as I said, for the next 30 years.
And Nagrok, I want to turn back to you now. How do you respond to this concern? Are there projects that are under consideration or areas of the Arctic that you think should not be considered for development? And when you think about the folks in Nuiqsut, the mayor, Rosemary Atungarok, and Eunice Brower and others that are saying, you know, we're concerned about this, how do you respond to that?
You know, I don't know what other projects are coming down the pipeline. And, you know, as with Willow, you know, when those do come forward, we will go through the same process that we did with Willow and evaluate it locally through the North Slope Borough, as well as working with the state and federal government to kind of make a determination on what we want as far as those projects that might be coming down the pipe. You know, if there was ever a project that we felt would, you know, the subsistence and Inupiaq lifestyle that we live is important. It's the most important for us. So if there was ever a project that we thought would negatively impact that in ways that would be irreparable, we would not be in support of that project. You know, the North Slope Borough has a Department of Wildlife Management. They've been doing caribou studies since inception, specifically the Tuskfoot caribou herd. In a recent report that I was part of or listened to, that Tuskfoot caribou herd has actually been increasing in population. They also monitor subsistence harvest data of local hunters in all of the communities, and the amount of take of animals has not been affected to date. And they'll continue to do that research, and the research that they're doing to protect our subsistence resources for the people on the North Slope comes from revenue generated through that development. So if there's not that development, that resource stream goes away, and we're kind of hindered in our journey towards that self-determination, right? We're managing our own resources in a lot of ways, and protecting them for the people.
Tim, is the Arctic the area of most concern for the Wilderness Society as far as future fossil fuel development, or are all areas equal concerning?
The Arctic is a priority for us, partially because of the amount of fossil fuels we have there. I mean, Alaska has 36% of federal lands. That's 222 million acres. We have 18% of America's land mass, but we have 53% of its carbon storage or carbon reserves. So, yeah, we're concerned about oil development and climate on federal lands across the nation. But the Arctic does get a special amount of attention for those reasons, and also because of the fact that it's warming, as I said, at 2 to 4 times the rate of the rest of the planet, and impacting these things such as coastal erosion, subsistence resources, et cetera.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's go back to the phones. Deborah is in Fairbanks. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. I'm very concerned about this project. I feel the people of Nuuksed were not listened to. Dr. Rosemary Tungaruk and the folks of Nuuksed were called outliers by Mary Peltola. I think that's a disservice. The people of Barrow, of Utqiagvik, get great revenue, but that does not always trickle down to the other villages, and I feel that they were not given a say. This administration in Alaska says yes to everything, and the federal administration. So I feel that there is not concern for climate change. I was in Nuuksed in the 70s and 80s and recently went back 2011 for about 10 years. The change in the tundra and the lack of sea ice was alarming. And if you've never been to the North Slope, and if you haven't been there for decades, it's a big concern. The people in Washington, and even the people in Utqiagvik, I think there is concern, but their voices are not heard.
All right, Deborah, thank you for your call and your comment. Tim, what does advocacy for the transition to renewable energy look like, and how has it changed in recent years? Do you see more momentum? Is there more happening?
Advocacy for it, yes, I think is increasing. I'm not on the science side, so I can't speak to everything that is happening across the nation on that. But many groups, such as the Wilderness Society, and I think people in the general population are now recognizing the severity of the climate crisis. I mean, we cannot pick up the newspaper, we cannot turn on the TV news without seeing more extreme storms, et cetera. So I think the concern and awareness of it is growing. Certainly the advocacy for it is growing from groups like the Wilderness Society and our partner groups across the nation.
All right. Nagrok, I want to turn back to you. You said in an earlier interview that the majority of the jobs will be filled by local people. What gives you confidence that most of these jobs will go to people who live in the Arctic rather than people who fly back and forth, as many do that work in Prudhoe Bay?
So just to be clear on that, you know, they're saying that there's going to be 2,500 construction jobs and roughly 300 permanent jobs at the site. Those jobs will largely be filled by trades, and hopefully there's some local involvement. What I mentioned, though, is that the indirect job output through the revenues for the North Slope Borough. The North Slope Borough is the largest employer on the North Slope. They provide services in all of the villages. Water and sewer, road development, infrastructure development. They build the schools, they handle the education system. They fund everything that a normal city would fund, and they fund it across the North Slope. All of those jobs in the villages need seats in those, or butts in those chairs, so to speak, and those jobs will be filled in large part by locals within those communities.
All right, let's go back to the phones for just a moment. We're getting a few calls stacked up. Let's go to Alan in Eagle River. Hello, Alan. Did you have a question?
I do. Thanks for taking my question. In addition to Willow, the administration's announced some areas of protections and restrictions that have included the Beaufort Sea. There is a high cost that's associated with exploration and new development in areas that are without supporting infrastructure. And for example, industry has not shown a real high interest in pursuing new oil and gas development or prospects in areas that are offshore or for the more recent Arctic National Wildlife Refuge areas that were up for lease. So my question is, is there a realistic or has there been a realistic expectation of development in areas that have been recently proposed from Sunday and yesterday by the administration for those additional restrictions and protections? Thanks.
All right. Any idea about the additional protections? I know that not a lot has been released about that yet.
Yeah, some of the details are still coming out. Our concern about these additional protections is, you know, they're positive steps. We like them. The problem is they're what we call non-durable protections, meaning a future administration could overthrow them or could overturn them and throw them out. In regards to his question about has there been development efforts in those regions, I believe this affects mostly the Beaufort Sea. I haven't looked at all those details yet, but those who have been around in Alaska a while remember back in like 2012, Shell was up here drilling in the Arctic Ocean. That was unsuccessful for them and they left, but there we have a precedent to show that, yes, there is interest from the oil industry in offshore on the Outer Continental Shelf. As for other protections within the NPRA, those are positive if they last. But again, there's a durability issue. And then with Willow, one of the concerns is that the infrastructure that results from developing this project will lay the groundwork for additional development, which ConocoPhillips has made clear they're already looking to the future for more sites, more projects at later times. So the infrastructure facilitating future development is a concern.
That is something that I wanted to discuss in the second half of today's program. We'll be going to a break here soon, and we'll be joined by Kara Moriarty for a little while. She's the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We'll be finding out a little more detail about what else might be on the horizon because of the infrastructure that will be built for Willow. Let's go back to the phones. Michelle is in Wasilla. Hello.
Hello. Yes. One of the concerns that I have, our major concern, is our military need and in self-sufficiency. And yes, nuclear is one answer. The other answer is a need for petroleum in terms of a crisis. And I believe that we've become too dependent on China, especially for aviation fuels lately. And there's a threat there that's directly evolving a world theater that we need to be aware of and be prepared for in case that there's any escalation in military effort.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Michelle. Tim, has it been difficult to get traction with the message of don't drill in a reserve that was set aside exactly for that? The NPRA is a petroleum reserve that was set aside in Alaska initially for military as a supply to be in reserve for the military. How difficult is it to advocate against drilling in a reserve meant for oil?
We like to call the NPRA, the Western Arctic, because we think it is a more fitting name for that really beautiful landscape and those wilderness values and the wildlife habitat. Yes, the NPRA was created as a petroleum reserve for the Navy in times of war. It is a problem for us that it's called a petroleum reserve, and part of the reason is kind of what you just alluded to. It's a petroleum reserve, as you just said. It's there for that purpose. What a lot of people, particularly Alaskans, don't realize is that in 1976, when Congress put the Bureau of Land Management in charge of running or managing the NPRA, Congress actually put a mandate in that legislation for the BLM to identify and protect special habitat and special areas. That's why today we have the Teshopuck Lake Special Area, the Colville River Special Area, the Kosciuszko Lagoon Special Area, and on and on. And then under the Integrated Activity Plan that was enacted in 2013 and then restored in 2020 after it was sort of gutted during the Trump administration, but we're now back to managing under the stipulations of the 2013 IAP, that management plan actually mandates that a little less than half of the reserve be set aside for conservation purposes, and a little more than half is available for oil and gas leasing. So a lot of people don't realize that the Congress actually mandated that part of the NPRA be conserved and be protected.
All right, thanks. We are going to head for a short break. When we come back, we'll hear more about the Willow Project and the Biden administration's approval of it, and also an announcement about some other protections for the Arctic Ocean and areas of NPRA. With our guest, Tim Woody, the Communications Director for Climate Solutions and the Wilderness Society, and Nagra Kharcharyk, the President of the Voice of the Arctic Inupiat. We'll also be joined by Kara Moriarty, President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, for just a bit as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Grant applications are now being accepted for tribal justice grants through the U.S. Department of Justice. Coordinated Tribal Assistance Solicitation, or CETAS grants, fund tribal courts and tribal law enforcement, open to federally recognized tribes across Alaska. Applications are open until March 21st. Learn more at atjrc.org/CTAS. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tribal Justice Resource Center.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the Willow Project today. Our call-in numbers statewide are 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Nagrok, I wanted to turn back to you. You had mentioned earlier that ANCSA, in a previous interview, that ANCSA and the mandate for the Alaska Native corporations to support shareholders and the Native people of the region. Talk about how you see a project like Willow fitting into that mandate.
No, the corporations have a socioeconomic responsibility to provide for the shareholders, their Inupiat shareholders, depending on the region or the village that they're in. You know, projects like this, although, you know, not a huge part of most folks' portfolio, will provide some contracting opportunities for the different organizations that have expertise in certain fields. They also have a mandate, they prefer to hire shareholders. If they do or are awarded these contracts through the bidding systems, they'll be able to employ as many shareholders as they can and hopefully provide some of that economic benefit back to their individual shareholders in the forms of jobs and dividends and other opportunities in different areas.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Daniel is in Anchorage. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I had a statement and then also a question for your guest there. By the way, thanks for this subject. It's very interesting to me, and I know a lot of other Alaskans. So my first comment is I think it's important to note that climate activists are typically against everything involving mining and drilling. So if they had their druthers, there would be zero mining or drilling anywhere. So that means that the only mineral and oil exploration would happen outside of the West, where there's significantly less environmental oversight and also involves slave labor and child labor to get it out of the ground. So my question is, what are your thoughts on the damage to the environment in mining the minerals needed for development of batteries, solar panels, and as well as other resources like the balsa wood for wind turbines, which are a major threat to the Amazon? And we're going to have to get that stuff figured out before we actually do a full transition away from these fossil fuels. And I do agree that it is a finite resource. We've got to find our way to, you know, getting away from that. But it'd be very, very damaging to a lot of people's way of life to do a quick transition. And currently, the way that we're doing it, just EVs in general are extremely damaging to the environment. And there's a big human cost to that as well. So that's my question. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Daniel, for the call. Tim, first, Daniel's first part of his statement. Are environmental organizations, I know you can't speak for all of them, but the Wilderness Society, are you against all drilling and mining?
That's a common accusation or myth about organizations like the one I work for. The answer is no. If you look at, there are many active and proposed development projects all across the Western states, including Alaska, that we did not get involved in fighting. We are we focus on federal lands, and we are very concerned at this point about how we use our federal lands. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, we have about a quarter of our national greenhouse gas emissions coming from fossil fuel extraction on federal lands. As an organization that wants to protect federal lands and protect the climate, we ask the question, like, how do we want to use our federal lands? Do we want to use them to produce a quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions coming out of this country? And so, yeah, we are concerned about the federal lands in particular, but we don't oppose every project that comes along.
All right. Thanks for the call, Daniel. Let's stay on the line for a moment. And now we'll go to Sam, who is also in Anchorage. Hi, Sam.
Hi, good morning. So I'm an environmental scientist, and I just kind of wanted to add a little bit of a bigger perspective for what this this new oil lease would mean. Okay, so here in America, we consume approximately 20 million barrels of oil per day. That is just an incomprehensible amount, but we are not even talking about reducing our consumption in the slightest. And this maximum production for maximum consumption, for maximum profit ideology that we live in, is going to cause very real consequences for not just us here in Alaska, but the rest of America and the rest of the world as well, in the form of these ever increasingly more violent weather impacts that we're seeing, such as the drastic snow event that shut down Anchorage for like a couple of days, or the fact that the Southwest is becoming ever more arid and will eventually force hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, to become climate refugees. We are not prepared currently to deal with the impacts that we are facing today from climate change, let alone the impact that will happen from drilling and consuming at maximum capacity for the next years, and the impacts that will come in decades to follow that. We have to start thinking about reducing our consumption entirely, as difficult and as hard as that is. Governments at every level, from local, state, and federal, to be the adult and say no. And with that, I think I will take my...
Thanks, Sam. You were breaking up just a little bit, but we got the main thrust of your message, which Sam, as an environmental scientist, is saying we've got to stop now. I want to stay with the phones, and we'll go on to another caller in Anchorage. John is on the line. Hello, John.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. And I just was wondering on the logic of the argument you're using against Willow. It seems from my research that there's enough supply in the world without Willow that you argue for climate change and cleaner energy, and I agree wholeheartedly, but by allowing Willow, it appears that we have more of a strategic benefit from it, and also the revenues going to our country as opposed to relying on other countries. And it just doesn't seem like Willow is going to make a difference in supply. And if it doesn't make a difference in supply, then it does. The climate change argument doesn't really apply, because the supply is there. We need to address changing over to cleaner energy. But by using Willow, at least it's in our country, and we are not then at a strategic disadvantage.
So you're saying that you want to see oil development in America rather than in other countries. Is that kind of the gist?
From my research, from my research, the supply is there in the world. We have enough supply at our current usage rate for many, many years to come. It's just it's going to be there whether Willow is there or not. So by saying well is going to do anything to climate change, it certainly doesn't appear that way to me, because the supply is there. It's just where we're going to get it. By not having or having well will not change the supply in the world. You know, we're still getting it. We'll just be getting it from other countries.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, John. Tim, what are your thoughts about John's comments?
Well, the world is awash in oil. I'm not an expert on oil markets, but if you read the news on oil supply and prices, we're awash in oil. We do not need oil, excuse me, from Willow. We have a plentiful supply. The United States actually exports oil. But in terms of his comment that Willow won't make a difference when we already have a big supply of oil, from a climate perspective, it's still a lot more oil that will be burned, on the order of, as I said earlier, more than 280 metric or 200 more than 280 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions over the next 30 years. If we don't drill Willow, that particular volume of greenhouse gases won't be emitted from Willow. We still need to address the overall supply of oil and the overall consumption of oil. As the earlier caller said, we need to change our consumption habits. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But mainly on Willow, it's still just adding to the problem.
Well, we had hoped to be joined by Kara Moriarty with the Oil and Gas Association, but we're having trouble reaching her. So, Nagrek, I want to turn back to you now and get your thoughts about the fact that Willow will almost certainly face legal challenges. When do you think or expect the state to actually see revenue? Critics point to state law saying that the state law will allow ConocoPhillips to deduct the expense of developing Willow, so the state will see a decline, actually, in tax revenue during the buildup. What are your thoughts about that?
I can't speak to the financial specifics necessarily, nor the construction schedule, but I think it's going to take some time, especially given the short construction windows that we have in the Arctic and the Conoco and other groups that do construction. They do it in the wintertime so that they could put in ice roads to minimize the impact to the environment, and then they kind of shut down in the summers and things. So it's going to take some time, more time than it would, the same size development happened in Lower 48, where you're connected to the road system and have resources kind of readily available. So it will take some time to start to realize that revenue, both locally within, on the North Slope in the form of taxes for the North Slope Borough, but also for the state.
All right, we do have Kara Moriarty on the line with us now. Kara is the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Kara, first of all, I want to get your overall reaction to the announcement by the Biden administration. Were you surprised that Willow was approved?
Well, I think we were pleased to see that the administration listened to his own federal agency, the Bureau of Land Management, and their recommendation to approve Alternative E. I think if the president had not done that, I think it would have been a bit odd, but we know that there was a lot of pressure put on that. And so we were pleased to see that the president ratified BLM's recommendation for Alternative E. And as you mentioned at the top of the hour, that it is a compromise, because the original permit 70 months ago is when we started this process, was almost 5 years ago, did call for 5 drill sites, and now it's 3. So, obviously, from our perspective, the president has said it himself that the country needs more oil, and this project does deliver an environmentally and socially just project. And so, now we look forward to seeing ConocoPhillips try to reach their final investment decisions so that folks can get to work.
And Kara, in reference to that reduction from 5 to 3 pads, and ConocoPhillips had wanted to put in 250 wells, now there will be somewhere around 200, 219 wells that will be drilled. Could they apply to amend the permit in the future for more pads?
I think that's always a possibility with any project approval. But I think at this point, they're going to focus on what was approved and the three drill sites and focus on getting that done and getting that done right and getting it done safely. And then, you know, see what happens, as you move forward. But, you know, those three drill sites theoretically can still get up to the 180,000 barrels a day projections. And so I'm sure that's going to be the focus.
I asked Nagaruk this question right before you got on the line with us, but Willow will face legal challenges. When do you think the state may actually start seeing revenue? There are folks that point out that state law will allow ConocoPhillips to deduct the expense of developing Willow, so the state will see a decline in tax revenue during that buildup. When do you think there will actually be an increase in revenue?
Well, even though there may be, you know, those credits only apply to production tax. So companies still have to pay royalty, which half will go to the federal government and half will go to the North Slope Community Impact Fund. And then the companies still have to pay income tax and they still have to pay production tax. And they'll still pay production tax depending on the price of oil. You know, because if the price of oil goes too low, then, you know, credits aren't deducted. And so, you know, that's all variable depending on oil price. So, you know, during the buildup, there may be a little less production revenue, tax revenue, but it doesn't stop other revenues from being generated. And that was the whole point of the production tax system when we adopted, or when the state adopted it. Been 10 years ago. It'll be 10 years in April that we've had Senate Bill 21, and that's the whole purpose, is to encourage new development and new projects, because we know the North Slope and Alaska is just a very high cost of place to do business.
And we started talking a bit about this before the break, but what can you tell us about, or what do you know about how much infrastructure will be built up? And will that make it easier to make other prospects more viable to develop? Maybe a smaller but good prospect that wouldn't pencil out on its own, but with Willow building roads and pipelines, et cetera, it might. What's the thinking there?
I think that it, you know, obviously it kind of depends, really kind of depends on the impact of these further restrictions that we saw announced in general, but we haven't seen in writing of the additional lands that are going to be put off for oil leasing, both in MPRA and in some of the other surrounding areas in federal land. You know, because, and I think a lot of it also depends on the success of some of the exploration work that's happening right outside MPRA and state land, that's kind of up near the PICA project. You can't see it, but I'm looking at a map, and so the downside of radio, I guess. But you know, there is a very you know, prospect that people are trying to prove up in leases on state land that could benefit potentially from the infrastructure at Willow. You know, so it's a little hard to tell, because you need the results of exploration work, and then you also, it kind of also depends on what will be available for future leasing looking forward.
And we need to take another short break, but Kara, before we do, 2.8 million acres of the Beaufort will be removed from consideration for leases. This is the last strip of that ocean area. President Obama put almost all of the Beaufort and Chuck GC's off limits for oil and gas development. Was offshore development on these last 2.8 million acres ever realistic? Has the industry lost opportunities there?
Well, I think any time that you take potential acreage off the table, it's a potential missed opportunity. You know, companies evaluate those projects as they come. You know, there was a mention of the revision in the late 70s of what the National Petroleum Reserve was supposed to be. But we also had ANILCA in 1980. And part of that was the no more clause, that there shouldn't be any more additional lands put in conservation beyond the 157 million acres that was part of ANILCA. So in some ways, it is concerning. We're not exactly sure what it will mean until we see it in writing, but we'll participate in that rulemaking to continue to have access to environmental and socially just projects like Willow.
All right. Thank you. That was Kara Moriarty, the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on the Willow Project as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Planned gifts as a bequest to your local station builds a legacy that is long-lasting. Thanks for considering this option.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the Willow Project in our final moments here. Tim, I wanted to get your thoughts about how decisions are made. Should the industry be at the table in negotiating development projects? Are they at the table?
My understanding is they're very much at the table. We're in a democracy. I suppose all interested parties should be at the table and involved in, you know, talking with the agencies and the federal government about what we want and what we do not want. Regarding how this came to be with Willow right now, we need to remember that and two summers ago, the summer of 2021, U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason ruled that the previous environmental impact statement for Willow was insufficient because the previous presidential administration failed to adequately address environmental and climate impacts. So that's how we got back to where we are now. My understanding is that BLM then worked with officials from ConocoPhillips to revise the plan to figure out how to make Willow work and how to create an environmental impact statement that would be acceptable and pass muster. And so when that final supplemental environmental impact statement came out on February 1st, so just, you know, weeks ago, it was interesting that the Department of the Interior, of which BLM is a part, the DOI that same day took the unusual step of issuing its own separate press statement to say that it had substantial concerns about the Willow Project. And the exact wording was, the department has substantial concerns about the Willow Project and the preferred alternative, which was what was recommended to the EIS, as presented, including direct and indirect greenhouse gas emissions and impacts to wildlife and Alaska Native subsistence. So there was not unanimity in the federal agencies on Willow.
Right.
BLM did recommend approval, but the DOI admitted to substantial concerns about it.
We know that Indigenous people, not only in the U.S., but in many places in the world, are hit hardest by the impacts of climate change, and they also have little political voice or power. Here's Rosemary Atungaruk, the mayor of Nuiqsut. The tribe and city is opposed to Willow.
We want to feel safe in our homes and our daily lives, and to be able to continue to be Inupiat in our lands and waters and eat our foods, and that they're healthy for our families.
Mayor Atungaruk made those comments at a Willow protest in Washington, D.C. earlier this year. Nagaruk, have you met with the leaders of Nuiqsut about their concerns with this project?
I have not had a chance to meet with the folks at Nuiqsut. You know, just to point out that too, the Village Corporation for Nuiqsut, Kukpik Corporation, sent in letters, and we're working with the federal government in support of the project, and specifically Alternative E that was recommended by the DOI. So there's no project that I think would have 100% consensus on anything, but there is, you know, I'm sitting in a board meeting downstairs. I had to leave it to come here, but I've got 24 board members from the North Slope that I answer to that represent Indigenous communities in various capacities at the tribal level, the village corporation level, the city level, and then the regional level. And, you know, we passed a resolution unanimously in support of the project. So there is some folks that are against it, but the majority consensus on the North Slope, and I think within the state of Alaska, with some of the support that we've seen come out, are supportive of the project.
This is federal land. Nagaruk, the federal government will get 50%. What do you think is realistic for the North Slope communities communities to expect for revenue while Willow is producing?
I think what we're anticipating now is $1.2 billion over the 30 years in revenue for the North Slope Borough to continue to fund the services that they provide to the community, bringing in and maintaining first world conditions for all of those people, maintaining the availability of jobs for all the people in the villages. And then also, I think it's $2.5 billion in the NPRA Impact Mitigation Fund that the cities of the communities within NPRA, as well as a couple of others, can tap into for community projects. I was in Wainwright, and they're tapping into that fund to build a new boat ramp to be able for hunters to be able to put their boats in the water safely. They're building a new rec center. They're working on designs to rebuild the city hall. Those funds are utilized to operate those cities that would otherwise not have the revenue available to them. So it's huge economically for the people on the North Slope, as well as the state of Alaska.
Tim, in our final moment here, or minute or so, Carlin Itchok stressed the need for the Biden administration to make public lands a part of the climate solution, not part of the climate problem. How would that work? How could public lands be used to lead the country to lower emissions?
Well, step one would be that we stop using our public lands to produce fossil fuels that, as I said earlier, are responsible for about a quarter of our national greenhouse gas emissions. Beyond that, you could look at public lands in a number of ways, one of which would be siting alternative energy products, wind and solar in particular, when you can do that properly and reduce the environmental impacts of those developments. And then also, you know, the scientists, and I'm not one, the scientists look at various things such as, you know, keeping open space and things like that to offset climate change and also to provide climate adaptation for wildlife when species need to move around and move from warming locations to they're going to be moving as places become uninhabitable or less habitable. They're going to be moving to different places for habitat, and we need those open spaces for wildlife for climate adaptation by those species as well.
We had talked earlier about the when things might start advancing with this project. Do you have any insight into what ConocoPhillips' plans may be in that regard? It sounds like they want to get started quickly. Could that still be started yet this winter?
My understanding is it could be. I don't know exactly what ConocoPhillips' plans are, but my understanding is they are making plans to proceed pretty rapidly with this, that would include activities this winter.
Nagarok, what's your understanding of the timeline? Do you have any sense of that?
I think that they're working right now to begin ice road construction and to start the process of extracting gravel as soon as they can. You know, we've got a few weeks left in the construction season, and I think they're going to take full advantage of that window before right around April 15th when things on the North Slope as far as tundra travel shut down.
All right, and Tim, when do you expect the Wilderness Society to mount a challenge? Equally as quickly?
As I said earlier, yeah, I think it will come very, very soon. I don't know exactly when litigation will be filed, but it will be soon.
All right, thanks so much to my guest today, Tim Woody, the Communications Director for Climate Solutions and the Wilderness Society, Nagarok Harcharak, the President of Voice of the Arctic Inupiat. We also heard from Kara Moriarty, the President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Michael Finelli helped us out today. I'm Laurie Townsend. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.